Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is Browns Monday. We're reacting to the Browns' latest loss, and this loss included the loss of Deshaun Watson for the rest of the season, and maybe ever, as Deshaun Watson blew out his Achilles. He's now slated to have surgery, and across from me, as he is every single Monday at 4, it's JP, Jonathan Peterlin. What's up, buddy?
Hey, I like that you said maybe. You did the Denzel Ward thing today where you're like, hey, there could be a possibility that Deshaun comes back and plays. When nobody thinks that's reality, right?
You're implying the playing. I think there's a chance he comes back.
And what, like restocks the Gatorade cooler?
He's got to do something for that $50 million.
It would be funny
Berea, you might as well do something.
It'd be funny if they tried to get him to quit and in doing so just gave him the most menial and just awful tasks just to have him go away.
Like drawing up an offense for Kevin Stefanski? That feels pretty menial.
That might be on Kevin's turf. He might be like, no. That's my gig. Only Ken Dorsey gets to go ahead and do that.
Hey, Deshaun, we got a couple trash bags. We got a guy for that, but you know, you're here, and why don't can you just go ahead and there's a dumpster out back. Don't worry about it. It'd really help us out if you go ahead and take care of that for us. Well, I think the question really becomes whether he's on the payroll or not, or how he's on the payroll. Because I think that's really what it is. I can't see a world in which that is the way Deshaun's season ends this year, knowing everything that came before it, and Deshaun plays for you again. That doesn't mean he might not be on the inactive roster, though.
You mean for this year? Or you mean
for next year.
For next year. You want him on the inactive roster just to hang out?
I don't want anything. There's nothing I want.
I mean, I basically thought we were just done with it. That was a cleansing of the palate. That was, and again, as many people that were cheering and applauding and doing everything else, I looked at it like, okay, I don't have to deal with that nonsense anymore.
Well, okay, but what does deal with it entail, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
I think we'll probably see what we saw last year, where when Flacco was the quarterback and Deshaun was in a suite in Los Angeles. I think it'll kind of be like that. Maybe he pops into a game or two, and maybe he does whatever he needs to do as far as being around the team to satisfy the contractual obligations of that. But I think they don't want him around either, right?
Well, no. For this year, yes. I think we're having two different conversations, because I was thinking about, well, I still think there's a chance that he's on the inactive roster like he was in Houston in 2021 next year. But yeah, I mean, I do think, and this is not about the cheering thing, which is something we can get to later. I do think that just not having to deal with that conversation anymore, I'm curious to see over the next couple of weeks how that manifests itself and whether you see a locker room that maybe plays a little bit more freer. I can understand why that didn't happen on Sunday, but I'd be very interested to see if the locker room maybe doesn't have that pressure on them. Maybe you see them play a little freer, especially on offense going forward.
Or maybe they just feel like they have a chance in these games.
Yeah, I don't know, because they had a chance on Sunday and it didn't change anything.
Yeah, no, DTR wasn't good.
Yeah.
Jameis was at the very end of the game.
How much stock can we put into that?
Why do you hate that drive so much?
I don't hate the drive. It was fun. It reminded me that you can actually throw for more than 10 yards in a football game, and I forgot about that.
That was some of the best passes we've seen all season long, was in that drive.
It's prevent defense.
I mean, DTR was not good, though.
No. Oh, yeah. I'm not defending DTR. No.
DTR reminded me of Deshaun. With more interceptions.
And maybe more athletic on the ground.
The ground was fun. Ground game was fun. I liked watching him run around a
little bit. More of that. Less of the interceptions, I would say.
Less of the bad throws.
I think the whole DTR Jameis conversation for Sunday is just weird. I think the idea, like, if I don't know how much you followed some of the sound, but like during the game I heard them talking. I think it was Nathan and Andrew being like, apparently Ken Dorsey was going up to DTR on like Friday and be like, be ready. Be ready for anything. And DTR is like, for like what? Going to Chili's?
Well, what's so funny about it is that DTR, so last year he got surprised, right? He was like, oh, I didn't know I was going to start that game. And then Deshaun ended up not playing. And so I had to play. And I didn't find out till 10:30 on that Sunday. And he was like shocked that he would be thrown into the fire. And then it seems like somehow, some way, the same thing happened again. And he was so, I remember last year, Nick, he was so vocal about it. Like, after the game, he was basically just yelling about everything, being like, I didn't get the right opportunity. I didn't know that I was going in. And we just argued. We're like, well, you're the backup quarterback. Like, be ready at all times. And he's like, no, I didn't know I was starting. And he got mad about it. And then the same thing happened again today, or this last weekend.
I mean, in fairness, not to move goalposts here, he did look better against Cincinnati than he looked against Baltimore last year.
When did he know he was playing this game? It seems like a big point of contention. On Friday, I guess he was supposed to be told something like, hey, stay ready. But I guess they just told him, stay ready, and then left that at that.
Yeah, I mean, I say that all the time. I go to my kids like, stay ready.
Hey, stay ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, it could be you have to drive dad to the hospital because you're having a heart attack. It could be I want some Funyuns and you got to make a run down the road.
I like you getting your kids to play like Gran Turismo or something like that, to be like, hey, prep, get ready in case you need to drive me to the hospital.
Yeah, or,
Cruising USA.
I kind of have them maybe
Dave and Busters.
Play some Madden so they can go ahead and be ready to call plays on Sunday, on any given Sunday, just in case the Browns need it. Hey, I got a 10-year-old, very spiffy, a lot of attitude. They'll get it done. Don't worry.
Very spiffy.
Like, can we all agree if Jameis plays in that game, they actually probably win that game?
You mean the one it was tight. It was a close game. By the time we got Deshaun injured and out of the game, what was it, 7-6?
It was a very close game.
With a couple minutes left in the half. I mean, like, you were right there.
That was right before. You were down because, remember, they had already scored.
Down 7-6.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I see. Math is hard for me.
That's okay.
But, and they got the Chubb touchdown, but and then Toast Newsome got toasted by Jamar Chase.
Toast Newsome?
Yeah, it's 100%. I'm not calling him Greg anymore.
How mean was that?
That was super mean.
And Toast Newsome?
Because here's the problem.
That's better than Lemon Wallane.
My problem with Toast is that he got abused by Jamar Chase, and then Jamar Chase did the Iverson. He stepped over him.
Yeah.
And Greg went right to the officials like, come on, man. It's like, you got burnt. Like, just take the L. Take the L. The officials don't care.
Jerry Jeudy throwing helmets. Elijah Moore being benched for series. This was an all-timer of suck all the way around.
I gotta say, kudos to the Browns for showing me time after time when I think, all right, I've seen almost everything you can see. Yesterday really did prove. Like, actually, if we really want to get to like what yesterday proved, it proves how much this just isn't on Deshaun. That's not a defense of Deshaun, because they're going to hear that and they're going to be, he's saying, no. More penalties, more bad passes, more convoluted concepts on the field. Like, even special teams, Dustin Hopkins bleeped the bed. There were way too many good returns. The one thing that I can tell you was really good from yesterday was the defense. And they, so you put any semblance of down the field passing with Jameis, even if you had just basically all you do is add big passes and even keep the interceptions that they had from DTR.
Sure.
If you put Jameis, same thing. He probably has twice the yardage of DTR and you probably win that game. And no one can tell you. No one can tell you why it became DTR instead of Jameis. Here's Kevin Stefanski. I want to play this. This is Kevin Stefanski when he was asked earlier today on why DTR over Jameis versus Cincinnati.
Yeah, kind of like we talked about yesterday. I think going into the season, I felt like both guys were worthy of being the backup quarterback. I told those guys that early in the season. Felt like with not having that short yardage package with Jameis in this last game, felt like Dorian had acquitted himself well in practice and in his preparation to make him the backup. That's the story.
So it was just you didn't have the short yardage package. That was the difference between Jameis being the backup the previous 6 weeks in this?
I mean, did you think that Jameis, when I heard the news yesterday doing the pregame, I thought they were setting themselves up for like a Jameis Winston trade.
I kind of thought that too.
Isn't that kind of what a lot of us thought?
Yeah.
Like sitting there like, all right, so Jameis is going to be traded somewhere. They want to get DTR in there. And listen, they love DTR. They've always loved DTR. They were adamant as we watched him kind of not be good last year, and then they went out and got Joe Flacco because both DTR and PJ Walker couldn't do it. They came back this year, and they kept telling you all preseason how much they love DTR, thought the world of DTR. I don't know. Maybe that's hogwash. Maybe it just is what it is, but I was convinced that they were going to throw DTR in there because they were getting rid of Jameis, and he was going to be traded somewhere. Now what do you do?
So I thought it was either you have plans to trade Jameis or – it was time to bench Deshaun, and you knew you couldn't go to Jameis because you need to. This whole thing is about selling hope. And that if you're going to bench Deshaun in game, or if you're going to try something, it's easier to, like, if Jameis plays well, you know what you're falling back on? All right. One, you're still probably not going to end up in the playoffs. Two, now you got to pay him. Whereas if DTR plays well, even if you don't make the playoffs, even if you just become competitive, now you can say we got a quarterback of the future and he's cost controlled for the next couple years.
It's a much better situation for the Browns if DTR is good. There's no denying that. No one can debate that. It just didn't seem like it was baked in any reality.
No.
Like nobody thought he was going to come in there and be awesome. Did anybody think that? There's no way you watched DTR last year and thought that he's got it.
I do tend to throw out the first exposure of a young quarterback. Unless it's just obscenely great or obscenely terrible. I thought there were a lot of glimmers once he came back in after PJ Walker got benched and then Deshaun got hurt again. I thought there were some things that were intriguing. But it's this concept of that they love him. That just doesn't... Yeah, you love every player.
Well, it's just what they got to say. What is their main goal?
Now?
Yeah. Are they trying to lose games, or are they trying to go ahead and actually win games and sell hope, like you mentioned? Because if they're trying to lose games, then you continue to throw DTR out there based off of what we saw this last week. If you're trying to win games, you do go with Jameis. Even though Jameis hasn't started more than 7 games in a season since before the pandemic, you still go with Jameis in that instance.
I don't know they know what the goal is.
Like, do you see the crossroads we have here? What exactly are they trying to do? And then conversely, does Stefanski and Barry go against everyone else's wishes in this because they don't care if they have a draft pick that they can't use because they win 3 games all year and then get fired? Like, it might be in Stefanski's best interest to almost do the Flacco thing with Jameis, win a bunch of games, and then sell everyone in the hope that he knows what the hell he's doing with quarterbacks.
I think it sounds to me like you're trying to logic this.
Oh, we can't do that these days, right?
No, I don't. I think this organization has been bereft of logic. I think winning went out the window when Deshaun wasn't playing well. I think they've been a dog that's chasing their tail all season long. And my prediction is they're going to win just enough to be just outside the sweepstakes for a quarterback. And you either have to trade up or draft the 5th best quarterback in this. And I do not see them somehow piecing together some semblance of, hey, this is what it's about now and this is what it's about going forward, because quite frankly, the thing that failed them to get to 1-6 is leadership.
Well, that sounds like they're just waving the white flag and they're just, okay, I guess it didn't work out with Deshaun, and this is, like, it almost seems like we put more thought into what they're going to do this upcoming week than they have.
Well, okay, because it's thought, and then it's getting everybody on the same page, and then it's leadership. And I don't think they're having all 3 of those things at the same time. 216-474-0092. Why was it DTR over Jameis? And we're being point blank here. If Jameis had been the backup on Sunday, do you think the result would have been different for the Cleveland Browns? I think it's tough to see Jameis as a professional quarterback, even against prevent defense, and not wonder if maybe he could have thrown your way into a couple scores. And with the way the defense is playing, that probably would have been enough to win on Sunday, even if it might not be enough to win this Sunday against Baltimore. More on that next on 92.3 The Fan. Everything's on the table now. For the rest of the season, with 10 games to go, everybody gets evaluated here, including Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry. Do you agree on that?
Yeah, and that's why I think he's got to play the quarterback that makes him look the best.
So is that about winning or is that the offense looking better?
I think it's about both. I think both things happen. I think you have a chance to win. I think the offense looks the best with Jameis Winston. I think with DTR, I know what that is. And I know you want to be like, oh, we'll give him more opportunities, give him more shakes. That was a deer in headlights yesterday. That wasn't good. It wasn't good enough. So, and with Jameis, I know it's prevent defense and you want to shoot it down instantly. I just feel like, even though, again, I'm not saying he's the world's greatest quarterback, I don't think he's going to be the world's greatest quarterback. He gives you an actual opportunity to have Stefanski not fall under 500 as a head coach.
I'll be honest with you. The Browns have no interest should have no interest in winning the season.
Hey, but you see how this conflicts.
Yeah, I do. But can I just tell you, selfishly, there's one reason why I want Jameis to play. It's going to look a lot more fun.
I thought you were going to say you wanted to see him bite some W's.
No, well,
which is part of the fun thing.
I would say very graciously eat some W's. He didn't bite them as much as
it's like Costanza eating
a Snickers
bar. He nuzzled
on the W, yeah.
The fork and the knife out? Is that what you're talking about?
I would say it was a very delicate. He suckled on a W. I don't know
I thought he aggressively ate those W's.
Now listen. No,
I ate those W's.
I just think with Jameis, I just think it's going to look more fun. I don't know. Here's the thing.
It did. The last 2 minutes looked way more fun than whatever DTR was doing.
Well, but here's the thing. It's probably going to lead to 3 interceptions a game.
So did Flacco.
But at this point, Joe was a 2 interception a game
That's
guy.
Right.
Let's be fair.
The 2 pick sixes in the Houston playoff game. Let's reel this back
in. Put some respect on Joe Flacco's name. I think selfishly, if Browns football looked fun again, I'd really enjoy that. At the same point, it's ironic we're X amount of days away from or weeks away from the election, because this is a two-party system here where Kevin Stefanski is Progress Now and let's win some games.
He needs to.
Stefanski 2024, Stefanski Winston 2024, and Andrew Berry is DTR. Think about next year.
Oh, no. I think they both got to be lockstep on this one. If I think they're both being evaluated for their jobs, I think they both need to sell the idea that they need to win as many games as possible, and they're going to go to the Haslam's office, and they're going to say, we need to play Winston so we can try to win games. And I don't know, if Haslam's smart about it, he'll say, we need a draft pick for next year. And then they'll be like, oh, you guys, they don't even want to win games. And then it's going to be a big clash in and of itself.
Jameis winning only complicates Andrew Berry's job. Because then you have to decide whether you're going to pay a guy who there's a reason he's not a starting quarterback in this at this point in his career.
Right, but Barry's got the same problem that Stefanski has, where at the end of 5 years, they have to be able to say that they are more than just a one-time playoff win team, and that's it. Like, they have to be able to sell something. You realize Stefanski's 38 and 36 overall.
Can't you sell the defense?
I think Jim Schwartz will sell the defense.
Well, no, if you're the guy that built the team. And this is why DTR makes more sense, because if you're the guy that built the defense and DTR plays well the final 10 games of the year, even if it leads you to the third pick in the draft, if you're Andrew Berry, you can go, well, I found that quarterback that actually played good football who might be the quarterback of the future.
I don't know. If I was Haslam, I'd say you spent more money than any other GM in the previous 2 years in the entire sport, and that's what you got to show for me?
Well, but at that point, then, nothing can save their jobs.
And that might be reality for us.
I think that's a little overreactionary.
But I think
the idea of both guys get fired, I think this is a sacrificial lamb. This team...
Are we pitting them against each other, then?
We aren't.
Certainly not.
But how the leadership group there does things... Yeah, every year there's been a fall guy for not meeting success.
I think if you're Stefanski and you throw DTR out there, it's going to be an uphill battle. I think if you throw Jameis out there, there's a chance that it goes the way of Joe Flacco. Like, there's a chance that you just catch lightning in a bottle and you go from there. And then it showcases. Why do people have so much confidence in Stefanski despite being really, not the most successful coach you've ever seen for a guy that's had the job for 5 years?
Do people still have a lot of confidence in Kevin? Because I've not heard
that
confidence.
There are a lot of Stefanski truthers still out there that believe that he knows what he's doing here.
Where are they? I didn't see anything on social media this weekend.
They've started to resign themselves to the idea, but they exist. And partly why they exist, Nick, is because of what happened with Flacco last year. If he can do it again, then Stefanski can sell everybody on the idea that he's awesome at this quarterback thing, with the exception of the one guy that could never play quarterback, and that was Deshaun Watson.
I think, if DTR, or if Deshaun playing was more than just a Kevin decision, I think who the quarterback going forward is more than a Kevin decision, because you have to do what's right for the direction of the organization, which is the exact opposite of what the right direction is for Kevin Stefanski keeping the locker room.
Do you think Haslam will come down and say, you need to play DTR because we need to have the best draft position possible?
I think it's just Haslam. I think Barry probably looks at this longer term, too. And listen, the catch-22 is they're going to tell you you probably should play the younger guy at some point, whether that's this week, next week, 2 weeks from now, you should play the younger guy. We're going to feign that we're trying to win by giving Jameis this job. But, this isn't just... Because the reality is, you shouldn't be about winning. Shouldn't be.
Not at 1-6.
Not at
1-6. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Not at 1-6.
Like, guys, even four.
Patriots aren't winning another game all year. Titans don't look like they're winning another game all year.
If you get to four wins, if you get to four wins, you're going to get you have the fifth or sixth.
You're the Giants last year who are now picking Malik Nabers instead of a franchise quarterback. And Malik Nabers is great, but you wanted the franchise quarterback.
But yeah, I mean, listen, here's the thing. The catch 22 is, I don't really trust Kevin because Kevin can only seem to be the best version of Kevin when a quarterback does exactly what he says. Again, people forget Baker Mayfield chafed in the system that second year with Kevin Stefanski. That wasn't just about Baker's injury. Baker wanted to do some other things. Kevin wanted to do his offense. That was a part of why that thing fell apart. But at the same point, guys, I mean, who do I side with here? Do I side with Andrew Berry, who has whiffed on every wide receiver until Cedric Tillman looked good on Sunday? Or the fact that we don't have a defensive line beyond a bunch of older veterans? The young guys are still just kind of, yeah, maybe he's somebody, right? Well, his best defensive lineman that he's drafted at this point is Alex Wright. It's a nice rotational round. Like, so I don't know. I don't know what the answer is from here, but I'll be honest with you. The number one reason I'm watching is every single move, including down to DTR and Jameis, is scrutinized. And the problem is for both Kevin and Andrew, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you win enough games, you might save the locker room. But if you take them out of contention for the first pick or a quarterback, all right, next year's going to be lost as well.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the locker room, though. How long can you play DTR if he looked like he did last week?
As long as you're going to play DeSean. Right?
I mean, because if you're saying that Andrew Berry and Haslam are going to go towards this idea of not winning ball games, which I agree with you, by the way. I'm not disagreeing. But at some point, then, you're going to have the same situation you would have had with DeSean, where it just looks obvious that he's not up to par. You're going to lose a bunch of games. And then guys like Myles Garrett are going to just tee off in post-game press conferences.
Can that be avoided anyways? I mean, I think so much of this, like, I think we've gotten to a point where we're trying to make heads and tails of a situation that just is what it is.
And stinky?
Yeah,
crappy.
No, but circling the drain. And, like, what's so tough is to get your bearings on this and figure out what's the right move, because none of us thought we were going to be here 7 weeks into the season. And I'll be honest with you, even if you didn't think the Browns were a playoff team this year, you didn't see 1-6.
No.
No one saw 1-6. And even if you did, you were just being contrarian. And so this organization has to pivot quick. And I think you and I are actually driving to the same thing, is you better choose a direction and stick with it.
Do you agree then that the DTR direction is the direction that helps you lose games, and the Jameis Winston direction is the direction that maybe helps you win games potentially?
I think it might help you. It might help you be more competitive. I don't know if it's going to lead to any wins.
I don't know that it's going to win any wins either, but it at least gives you a chance to. So as long as we can play with that idea, then it seems like this choose-your-own-adventure map seems pretty clear. And they'll tell us through their actions where they stand.
Yeah, but again, I think... Does anybody know if they're on the same page internally?
I don't know how they can be when we laid out the idea that Stefanski's probably driving towards something way different than what Berry is right now, and maybe Berry and Haslam are lockstep, but it feels like everyone is on a million different pages.
Yeah, it's so funny. Maybe it's because we're turning the page and trying to, you know, do everything all at once here. But I don't get a sense that the Browns are going to make their way out of this in a way that is equitable for everyone, or in a way that, quite frankly, makes sense. Like, any decision you make, there comes a cost that is, you know, hey, if you're going to ask guys like Miles, and honestly, I think the number one thing they should consider doing is, if you play DTR, you might have to consider sitting Miles for the rest of the season and letting him get healthy.
Yeah, because that was one of the things I mentioned on the TV, was how, like, Miles thought that just being on the field while injured was going to be enough to motivate everyone, and then he realized, you got to be vocal. You got to do a little bit more than just playing through a million injuries. Well, if you're that injured, maybe it is time we just shut down Miles.
But I mean, but again, you have to choose a concerted effort. But the problem is, I just don't see it. I don't see Kevin keeping the locker room through losing. So, all right, do you choose going for the number one pick, evaluating all that kind of stuff, trying to build a winning culture with a head coach who might not be here? Because everybody says Andrew. I think Andrew's going to be fine. I think Andrew's going to be.
Is that
here.
Like the Paul DePodesta side of things? Like, if you're in the front office and you're kind of away from people, maybe you're safer than we think.
Well, I think it's.
But where's the confidence in Barry staying coming from?
I think firing the head coach and the GM at the same time is same old Cleveland stuff. I don't. I don't think people realize how hard it is to get one of those.
If the shoe fits, Nick.
But I think Andrew Berry probably has more ingratiated himself.
Okay, good thing you didn't say earned.
What is earned? Like, I think that's what, like, it's none of these guys have done an awful job. They just haven't done a good enough job. They came in with
After 5 years, you lose your job for that.
Not every team in the NFL.
After five years with one playoff win, you got to show more than one.
Yeah, you keep going back.
You win one or two games in the NFL, you're not keeping your job, Nick.
216-474-0092. Are Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry the right guys to pick the next quarterback? And are they both under evaluation? Or do you think maybe one guy has more scrutiny than the other? Jason Stanford, former Cleveland pitcher, next on 92.3 The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You said something off air that I don't know I could have related to any harder, which was the Guardians-Yankees Game 5, the thing that ended the ALCS, feels like 1,000 years ago.
It does. It just feels like a lifetime ago. I was trying to, as you were talking about in the 340 segment, I'm like drawing my thoughts from it, and I'm like, geez, was that Game 4? Was that Game 3? What game was that? Like, it happened so long ago, I'm just blanking on all of it.
And there's a lot to get to with it, and including the fact that the season's over for the Guardians, and a season press conference, by the way, tomorrow. You're going to hear a bit of that sound, certainly on our show. Excited to kind of hear where the organization is, although not excited the season's over, but to talk about the end of the dream, at least for this year. We head out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And welcome on former Cleveland pitcher Jason Stanford. What's up, Stanny?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you guys?
So we're doing well here. Do you agree that the loss on Saturday night feels like 3 weeks ago already?
It does feel a while ago. I forgot today was Monday. It's so awkward not to have baseball in our lives anymore the rest of the season.
So I do want to get to one thing. Let's just rip the Band-Aid off of. Should they have walked Gio Stanton?
I call him Mike still.
You can call him whatever you want. He hit a hell of a home run. Should they have walked him in the sixth inning?
It's a flip of the coin for me on that one. So you get two outs, you walk, Soto. You look at the whole thing there. Because he pitched to him, I'm going back to just bad pitch selection and not so much location. I know it was, top of the zone, fastball, middle. I'm just looking at better pitch selection. Like, he fouled off so many good pitches, to be able to do that. And my biggest thing is, if you're going to pitch to him, then you have to mix it up. You can't just keep throwing fastball after fastball after fastball and expect a difference.
Tomorrow, when they all speak, Jason, are you expecting them to tell us what a great season it was, or are you expecting them to say, we fell short of our desired goal of winning a title? Is it going to be pom-pom waving and celebrations, or more of like, we're disappointed we didn't get the job done?
I think a lot of it is going to be they're happy with the way the season, you know, played out. They're not happy with how it finished. They had a great regular season. I mean, you go out and you win 93 games, and when that's not expected, I mean, everybody had them anywhere from, I think, 74 wins to 82 wins was, I think, which was the predictions coming out, you know, in spring training. The biggest thing that I look at is that the Yankees didn't beat them in the playoffs. The Guardians lost this series. There are so many things that they go back to that they lost that it wasn't Guardian baseball. You know, and it's just, I'm not going to say it was the big lights or it was the pressure, but it's just, it's one of those things where if you take your pulse off the moment, you lose sight of what happened, and that's exactly what happened late in the games every time.
Jason Stanford, former Cleveland pitcher on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. So you kind of got to it there, but I think, you know, whether it is the payroll conversation or the approach at the deadline or the lack of starting pitching or Steven Vogt's decision-making early in that series, it's been interesting to watch people point to one specific thing and say, hey, this is why the Guardians didn't advance past the ALCS. If you had to choose one thing, whether it's Vogt, the payroll, any of this kind of stuff, if you kind of emphasize one thing, what's that one thing that you maybe think is most to blame for the Guardians not advancing past the ALCS?
Lack of starting pitching. When you don't have starting pitching in the playoffs, your bullpen gets exposed, and I think we all saw that in this series, even though it was shorter than what we hoped for. You have Bibee, who does a great job. I mean, he pitched his tail off, made one mistake, you know, in game five, but he didn't, his first time out, he didn't pitch that well. You have Matthew Boyd, who was up until that point was the only starter to go five innings, you know? So when you don't get production out of your starting rotation, that's really difficult because now you're counting on your bullpen to, number one, come in earlier than they're expected, number two, to go multiple innings, and if you have three games in a row like they did, you really saw a lot of the pitches become flat. Not so much velocity down, but just flat pitches, you know? And, you know, when I looked at it that way, that's tough to swallow, especially when you're looking at the whole spectrum of it. These relief pitchers, yes, they have quality, great fastballs, but what they weren't utilizing to their benefit was their secondary stuff.
Let me ask you about Class A. Back to game five. Vogt goes with Class A in the ninth when it was a tie game. He does his job. He gets out of it. Is that the type of thing that Vogt can look back on this series and at least say, like, I trusted my guys, even if they were struggling, I trusted my stars in the big-time moments, and I put the ball back in their hand?
No, I think it was good, you know, for Class A to get back out there. I'm personally not a fan of a closer coming in a tie ball game in the ninth inning. I never have been. I still probably won't be, you know, to this day. I am happy, though, for Class A to finish off the season on a high note. You know, he struggled in the playoffs, especially against the Yankees. Just his fastball, you know, wasn't as sharp as it was. I still think that you have to be able to pitch inside to be effective away. And, you know, the most part, all the Guardians pitchers, including Class A, did not pitch like that. Now, he did do that in game five. He kind of stood up Judge, and that was good. You know, so to be able to do stuff like that, you have to go back and look at, you know, the video of it and everything else, but you have to be able to pitch effectively inside.
Jason Stanford on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. The big question now is, how do you get better, right? What do you consider doing to this roster so that maybe next year, if you're back in the playoffs, you have a better chance to continue on the success you had this year and maybe break a drought of over 76 years now? Would you consider shopping Class A for the right offer to maybe make the rest of the team better?
I wouldn't even entertain that at all. When you have a guy like that in the back of your bullpen and you still have control of him, you leave that as is. My biggest thing looking at this is the big picture, right? You have a ton of talent offensively. You have a ton of talent in the bullpen. You need starting pitching, though. When you lack starting pitching, you know, you need to make sure that you get it out there continuously. And for me, I still don't think when they went to the trade deadline and they picked up Matthew Boyd and they picked up Alex Cobb, I don't think that was enough. I know Matthew Boyd did a very nice job in the playoffs. Cobb, though, I mean, he was hit or miss. You need to go out and get yourself a bona fide number one guy. Spend a little bit of money. Don't be afraid to spend some money. You got a lot of money in the playoffs. Go spend a little bit of money.
All right, you gotta split the tie here. Going forward, DTR or Jameis, who you have as the Browns' starting quarterback?
Tucker Stanford.
I don't think he's graduated high school yet.
Good arm, though.
Very good arm, right? I mean, he's underutilized right now. He's, you know, size-wise is a little bit below average. No, but in all seriousness, I'm going Jameis Winston. I know it was mop-up time late yesterday, but he still, I think, can control that offense better than DTR. And plus, you have a veteran. I'm looking at it, you know, the moment that happened with Deshaun, I'm saying go out and find a way to go get Flacco again. You know, he's sitting on the bench now. Go say to Indianapolis, I'll give you a fifth and a seventh and some salary dump. Like, let's do this again and see how we can flip the script.
I mean, Jason clearly in the side of just wants to, you want to win games. You're going to give up draft picks. You want to win games.
I'm tired of losing. You know, it's in my DNA to win. Like, I am accustomed to winning. And if I'm going to be part of this city, I want the Browns to go out and make a splash. Even if they finish below 500, show the fans, you know, that, hey, they're trying to go out there and win some games.
8-9. 8-9.
There we go.
Yeah, let's get Joe Flacco here. I'm actually the point of the
Nick
season.
Hated that answer, by the way.
No, hated it. Hated it every bit of it.
I could see him. You were getting livid over there.
The idea at 1-6, we're trying to win. No. Burn, baby, burn. All right?
Oh, man. Hey, that would be a win for everybody. If they go 8-9, that is a huge win.
How? Maybe that keeps them up. How is that a win? How is getting to below 500 a win, even though that does mean 7 wins in your next 10 games? How does that get you any closer to being a Super Bowl contender?
I'm not saying it's a Super Bowl contender by any means. That didn't come out of my mouth. All I'm saying is you finish up on a positive note. You finish 700 ball, you know, going forward. But it's going to be a rough feat for them moving forward, unfortunately. You know, hopefully you get some of these younger guys to kind of maybe step up.
Jason, great stuff, buddy. Appreciate you. And go Guards.
Go Guards. Hey, I'm going to say it today. Go Brownies.
That's a little late for that. Jason Stanford on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.